This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
It's World Cafe. Hey, I'm Kaleo. I'm a fan of those who are deeply passionate about their craft, who love the nitty-gritty, how the smallest detail can make the biggest difference, and they want to tell you why. So it's no surprise I took an immediate liking to Jacob Collier. The composer, singer-songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist has won Grammys, played with Joni Mitchell, and is a freaking wizard when it comes to melody and harmony. It's mesmerizing. Collier's new album is called Jesse Volume 4. As the title implies, it's the fourth in a series of albums that have seen him work with a dizzying number of collaborators, including Brandi Carlile, Michael McDonald, and the hip-hop artist Stormzy. Jacob Collier joins me to talk about how it all came together. Plus, he discusses why he's so happy to take on the role of music teacher to the internet, and we get lost in the musical weeds, exploring the barely perceptible sounds hidden in between hundreds of tracks. Jacob Collier coming up after a song from Jesse Volume 4. Here is Little Blue.
Singing, don't be afraid of the dark. In your heart, you're gonna find a way to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. You're gonna find a way. Don't be afraid of the light. It's alright. You're gonna find your
This is World Cafe. I am Kaleo. Jacob, welcome to the show.
Hi there. How's it going?
It's going very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fabulously. Thank you so much for asking.
You know, we just heard a song that you did with Brandi Carlile for the new record called Little Blue. You were on stage with Brandi and Joni Mitchell at the Grammys.
Oh, I know. Tell me about it. It's crazy.
So having the smallest bit of distance from that performance, what was it like for you?
It was truly surreal. You know, Joni has defined so much for me and so many millions, if not billions, of musicians. I think anyone who makes music in 2024 has been inspired by Joni Mitchell, whether or not they have spent time with her music. She's one of these musicians who has infiltrated and inspired and planted such fundamental seeds for all of us storytellers in the world. She's also, I mean, in her own words, back from the dead. You know, she had a brain aneurysm which completely removed her from the ability to speak and walk. And so I think it was just moving on many levels. The fact that she was there in her chair with her staff, she sort of holds this black staff on stage and kind of conducts herself using it. But the fact that she's, you know, she's here with her twinkling gray eyes, just, you know, it's so profound as a sort of lover of improvisation and phrasing and placement and timing and storytelling overall, just to see her at her twinkliest.
I absolutely love it. This is World Cafe. We're talking with Jacob Collier right now. The new album is called Jesse Volume 4, the culmination of years of work. What was the initial idea for the Jesse series?
So I've been making music for, 29 years, since I'm 29 years old. A lot of it I've made in this very room that I'm speaking to you from in North London, in my family home. And you know, I've made lots of different kinds of things over the years, different shaped things. But back in sort of end of 2017, I had just kind of finished the album campaign for an album called In My Room, which is my first ever album. And I made that album entirely by myself in solitude in this very room. And I toured around the world with a one-man show for a little while. And it was really so exciting, so dynamic as a time. But there was one thing I was craving at the end of the campaign, and that was collaboration. So what I really wanted to do was to throw paint, as they say, with some of the sort of greatest and most inspiring thinkers and creators all across the world. I thought, if I'm going to collaborate, I should do it times a million. I should go to every corner of the world I can possibly go to, ask questions, learn, go figure. And so my original idea in 2018 was to make four albums in 1 year. It's a very sort of a very, very, very ambitious idea.
Yes.
And I sort of soon realized that, you know, in order to do each of these kind of chapters of the process justice, it was only prudent to give them the time that they needed. But yeah, it's been a crazy long journey, and I've learned more than I could possibly say.
This being the final album in the series, you know, in what ways did the outcome deviate from your original vision, if at all?
The overarching kind of structure I laid out for myself was Volume 1 was to be an orchestral album, an album made out of orchestral sounds and orchestra, amongst other things. Volume 2 was to be a smaller scale acoustic album, so perhaps more based on sort of folk and some gentle kind of soul influences there. And then Volume 3 was more of a digital escapade, kind of more experimental sounds, collisions of strange forces and a little bit of R&B presence in there, I suppose. And then Volume 4 was this big question mark. It was like, what will I want to do at the end of the process? I don't know what I'm going to want yet, so I'm going to leave a space. And I'm glad I did do that, because I didn't know really what the album was about until I went on tour in 2022. And in 2022, this kind of concept of the audience choir evolved to quite sort of inspiring and spiritual heights. And the concept of, you know, conducting these audiences in harmony, which I'll get into later, really kind of changed the North Star of not just this album, but in some ways my whole life. You know, it really kind of made me question fundamental things and marvel at the magic and majesty of what music can do. But that feeling philosophically, and that the sound of those voices in harmony kind of became totally at the middle of this album. The idea that the album is almost like a celebration of the human voice in its various forms from all over the world. And so not only are there collaborators from all continents of the world,
yeah,
on this album, who are artists in their own right, formidable artists, but there are also 100,000 voices from all these different shows, over 100 different shows all around the world that I've kind of taken and they've become part of my palette for this album.
Oh, that's incredible. There's over 100 different musicians on this album alone. I'm obviously more than featured collaborators, but just whether it's choir or strings or horns. And so from a logistics standpoint, how does that even work? That is so much to keep track of. And like it's almost like being a conductor as well as a composer in this situation, I imagine.
Yeah, I think it's something I've thought about a lot in the last few years, almost as music in a sort of culinary way. It's almost like you're seeking the recipes that are most satisfying. And whereas back in the day, say 10 years ago, I would have played every instrument myself and contributed everything myself. I think now it's like curating the magic of a multitude of different colors and flavors and materials.
So you have the grand scale of like, how do you make all of these pieces fit and work? But then there's the sort of moment-to-moment work, which is everybody works differently. Every artist has their own process. Did you find yourself adapting your creative process with different performers?
It's funny that there's a myth, which I often consider, which is that, you know, if you kind of make yourself... The myth is that, you know, if you make yourself too big in a room or on a stage or in the world as a person, then there'll be less space for other people to be their biggest self. But the truth is, the bigger you are, the more confident you are in your ideas, your direction. In essence, the more space there is for your collaborator to step into the room and find themselves in it, because, you know, you're giving permission to have ideas by having ideas yourself. So, you know, I've definitely learned, I suppose, the art of having an idea in a way that is open, but also has direction and has a strong enough compass to guide both me and, you know, a collaborator or series of collaborators in the room towards a direction that is coherent. But I would certainly say that compasses have become more prevalent and important than maps, you could say. There's not a method that always works, but I think a sense of direction is helpful. And then I think just the ability and willingness to ask questions is not only musically satisfying, but also really fun. And I've learned so much from asking questions.
I'm talking to Jacob Collier today on World Cafe. Let's get to another song from the album, Jesse Volume 4. Track is called A Rock Somewhere, and it features Anushka Shankar and Varjarashi Vengapal.
I'm on a rock somewhere. It's the only one I know, and I know it well. And somehow I know you're there, and I'm waiting on the world. I'm ringing the old church bell. I've forgotten how it goes, but it feels like hell. like you're in heaven now. Even when I'm wide awake, I know that you don't have other dreams for sure. If nothing's ever gonna change at all, I'll be waiting on the world.
Jacob Collier here on World Cafe. That is new music from his album, Jesse, Volume 4. The song is called A Rock Somewhere. You know, a lot of people love to talk about your musicianship, your collaborations, your influences, but I'm kind of curious about your lyricism. What are some of your lyrical influences?
Oh, wow, yeah.
I know that could be millions, but...
Oh, yeah, it's a massive question. I would say, lyrical inspiration for me has been a lifelong fascination. I mean, the world is very inspiring. Words have always been very inspiring to me. I think I increasingly try to write lyrics that are, in essence, quite simple, but capacious, you could say. So containing a multitude of things. So, for example, with that song, Rock Somewhere, you know, the feeling at the heart of that song, it's funny, I wrote that song on one plane journey from London to Vancouver. I was doing a TED talk. And I wrote the song on the plane. I even recorded some of the vocal for that song, which is still on the album, on my phone, and used AI to remove the sound of the plane, which is kind of an amazing thing.
Wild.
But the words, so they fell out on that flight. And you know, it's funny. I think a lot of people feel a grief that they can't describe at this moment in history. Things feel too big to grieve and almost too impersonal to grieve. But everything also feels very, very. Just really vivid at the moment. And I also think a lot of my personal grief at this current moment feels for the planet, our very fragile, beautiful planet. And so in a sense, I didn't realize until after the song was finished, but I thought, actually, this song is about Earth, you know, a rock somewhere. I'm here on Earth and I'm spinning around and I'm looking for answers. I find it an interesting challenge to kind of, describe the world as I see it, or I could say more accurately, how I feel it. But I do find that if I think too constantly about lyrics, then I get paralyzed. And I think that the most accurate thing I can do as an artist is to sort of throw paint in a direction that feels true. And sometimes I would say often I learn what the song is about or how I'm actually feeling about the world through the process of writing the song, which is, you know, one of music's many gifts for me.
This is World Cafe. We're talking with Jacob Collier. The new album is called Jesse Volume 4. If I'm watching an interview with you or seeing you on stage, you are often explaining complex music theory. Is it strange to almost become the de facto Bill Nye, the science guy, except for music theory?
Well, it kind of happened by accident, really. I never really thought of myself as, right, I'm going to be a teacher or an explainer of things, but I just absolutely love it. I love talking about this stuff. If someone asks me a question about how music works, whether it's in the simplest of terms, like what is a sound, or, you know, how do you define, you know, big and small, or the deepest of terms, you know, what is, you know, microtonal voice leading or super ultra hyper mega meta Lydian, you know, I've become conscious of and sort of investigated all levels of this spectrum of music, and I just absolutely adore the process of discovering it as I explain it. Because sometimes, you know, you don't know you understand something, or you don't have a sense of what it is that you understand until someone asks you the question. There's no point in me learning stuff if I'm not sharing it with other people. You know, some people think, oh, I'm going to learn all this stuff for me, and then, I don't know, not tell anyone. But like, why would you not just explain what you know? It's like, I'm only going to be on the planet for a limited amount of time.
Right.
Hopefully much longer than this. But still, it's like, the more people can take my ideas and play with it, just go ahead. You know, it's like, I've got nothing to hold on to. And I think what's inspiring me at this point in the creative atmosphere and climate is that I think more and more people are, I think, being more open about their craft than ever before.
This is World Cafe. We're here with Jacob Collier. The new album is called Jesse Volume 4. All right. I a minimal amount of geeking out here musically with you.
Okay.
I saw the YouTube tutorial, or not tutorial, or video where you opened the track list for Well. And you know, this is an average for you. It's not the high end or the low end, but 500 tracks. Mm-hmm. That is a lot going on in a song, and maybe sometimes including parts that are almost imperceptible to the human ear. But how do you keep track of what is going on when you have that many parts at play?
I don't know how I do it, actually. It's a bit of a mysterious thing. I think I have a sort of semi-photographic memory, which gives me the ability to kind of know where I left something. Because what you end up with is like a kind of like a, say, like a 10-meter high stack, like literally that height, if you lay all the tracks up on the computer,
sure,
of tracks, and you're constantly navigating page down, scrolling. I don't really color code things very much. So I think in terms of workflow, I think I've evolved, as many creatives do, to sort of come up with systems that suit that kind of brain. But it's funny, to me, the process of creating something is a lot about zooming in and zooming out in quick succession. You know, you're zooming out to get a sense of how this thing feels from a distance, and you're looking for the nuances that catch you when you're looking from 100 meters away, whatever, and then you zoom in to the deepest possible crevice of tiny details.
It's like being a photo editor. You're working on this big picture, but every time you're
Exactly. It very much is like that. The process of, you know, does this still look coherent from afar? Does it feel coherent from within? And yet every detail, every pixel, you could say, is placed there for a kind of, you know, for some reason, to help you feel something. Yeah, I appreciate that a lot of these nuances, you know, when you listen the first time, you're not necessarily going to hear them. Mm-hmm. You won't think like, oh, I see what Jacob did there. But I do believe that you feel them. And I think that an album like this is designed in a sense to be listened to a number of times, where each time you listen, you're able to climb just a little bit deeper, a couple rungs down on the ladder into some of those kinds of intentions and feelings. And not that you need to. I think you kind of should be able to listen to the album from whichever distance you want to. But I think because I listen for those things when I listen to music, it only makes sense to include that level of detail when I make music.
We're going to play the song. Well, is there something that you would say that you are particularly proud of or happy with the result that someone might not catch on the first listen, but you could say, hey, it's there? Any of those moments in that song?
Yeah, there were quite a few. I'll give one from the end and one from the beginning. The one from the end is there's actually a cohort of animals hooting and squawking. There's like an elephant, a rhinoceros, an alligator. Kind of like, and it's just like a cahoot, you could say, in that last 20 seconds. It really gives the impression that everything is alive and rabid. And what I extraordinarily doubt that anyone will hear on first listen is in the very first second and a half of this song, what you're actually hearing is a sound. It kind of goes like, and then it goes, before the guitars come in. That sound, if you open that sound in a spectrogram editor, It's actually a croc, like
a croc
drawn in the spectrogram. And I found this website that translates images into sounds. And I mean, I'm a huge advocate of croc shoes. I have been since 2004. And so I put a croc in the beginning of this song. So it goes, which it tickles me every single time.
Ready?
Song as well. It's Jacob Collier, Remy Wolf as well there on the new track from his album, Jesse Volume 4. My name is Kaleo. It's World Cafe. Jacob's my guest today. Before we go, we have one last song that we want to play that's not from Jesse, but it's still the culmination of, oh my gosh, so much work. How much time and energy did you spend on Can't Help Falling in Love with the audience and putting this all together? Because it is astounding.
Oh, okay. So this was a bit of a passion project for me on tour. I recorded every audience on the US part of my tour in 2022 singing one word of a song, but they didn't know what the song was. And so I think the first show may have been Portland, and they sang Wise, and then Vancouver was second, and then they sang Amen, and then Seattle sang Say, you know. And so it went on like this in the key of F major. And then, yeah, by the end of the tour, I had the whole song. In fact, it was to the number of shows, which I didn't plan, if you could believe that. I didn't plan it, but it was to the number of shows. I ended up with the exact right number of words for the song. And then accompanying the words that the audience sang are themselves audiences singing more triadically. So one of my favorite things to do with an audience is to sort of polyphonically play them as a big instrument, almost like an organ. And I'll divide the audiences into, say, three different segments, or sometimes more, sometimes up to six if there are balconies. And I sort of give each segment of the audience a starting note. So say that the left side will be ooh, and the middle will be ooh, and then the right will be ooh from a stage perspective. And then what I do is I point up and down whilst looking or gesturing towards each segment, and their notes then rise and fall. But I don't tell them what to do. They just know. They already know.
It's instinctual.
Yeah, it's like I'm tapping into this kind of hive mind of musicianship that exists in everybody. And I've tried this in, you know, not only shows of mine where there are lots of musicians there, but also at festivals, music festivals around the world, like Glastonbury last summer with 30,000 people, with really the majority of people are not musicians by trade. And it works with everyone. It's an amazing thing. And so I've just begun to do these really euphoric, spiritual kind of audience choir moments at the shows. It's really one of my favorite things to do. And I chopped up a bunch of different audience choir, triadic polyphonic audience choir moments. And I found places where they could accompany the audiences singing the melody. So it's an entirely audience-created accompaniment and melody of one of my favorite songs of all time, Kind of Falling in Love.
It's absolutely beautiful. Jacob Collier and the audience choir, Can't Help Falling in Love, here on World Cafe. Can't Help Falling in Love. It's Jacob Collier and the audience choir on World Cafe. The new album is Jesse Volume 4. Jacob, this was an absolute pleasure. Congratulations on this Herculean task.
Thank you so much for having me. My absolute pleasure.
You got it. I'm Kaleo. More in a moment on World Cafe.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.